During the Vietnam War, the term military advisor stoked controversy at home. Critics saw advisor as a code word for war escalation. Today, Special Forces and CIA advisors again are on the forefront of U.S. military involvement. American advisors are working in the Republic of Georgia, the Philippines, and numerous other spots around the globe. Technological advancements have made them even more influential and crucial to the war on terrorism, NPR's Eric Westervelt reports.
In early 1962, President John Kennedy ordered several thousand more U.S. advisors to Vietnam, expanding the number sent to Southeast Asia by Dwight Eisenhower. On paper, anyway, the advisors' mission was to train the South Vietnamese Army and provide logistic, intelligence, and technical support. President Kennedy took pains to say that advisors were not fighters.
We have increased our assistance to the government. It's logistics. We have not sent combat troops there, though the training missions that we have there have been instructed, if they are fired upon, would of course fire back to protect themselves, but we have not sent combat troops in the generally understood sense of the word.
But like so much else in Vietnam, that official line and the reality in the field were sharply at odds. For those early trainers and advisors who later worked daily with the South Vietnamese Army, the line between advisor and combatant was a thin one.
When I was a lieutenant in Vietnam, I didn't seem to care, nor did I know about any contradictory rules of engagement that were put out.
Retired Brigadier General David L. Grange was an advisor during one of two tours of Vietnam. Grange helped conduct long-range reconnaissance missions deep inside North Vietnamese territory.
Very loose rules of engagement. Always defend myself and my comrades or the Vietnamese unit that I worked with. And offensively, if we could identify enemy forces anywhere, we could engage them. I didn't learn about some of the controversy between commanders in the field and the Pentagon until later on in life.
Today, the U.S. military advisor, whether from the Special Forces or the Central Intelligence Agency, is once again in the vanguard of military action. Today's advisor is older, higher in rank, and has more extensive training in combat, cultural, and language skills than his Vietnam-era counterpart. Mike Vickers is a former Special Forces advisor and CIA Special Services officer.
These kinds of forces, the Special Forces advisors, are really at the forefront of American foreign policy right now. They're being used in the Philippines, in Yemen, in Georgia, in a variety of different roles. And it's because of their relative maturity to other forces and their flexibility that they're able to do some of these things, and it's fulfill a range of missions, not just wartime missions, but peacetime.
In Pentagon speak, the advisor trainer is a large force multiplier. That means commanders get a lot out of a few soldiers, and technology has played a huge role in widening their tactical advantage. Satellite communications and all-weather satellite-guided munitions, for example, helped special operations advisors to the Northern Alliance in the early part of the Afghanistan campaign. A soldier with a combined global positioning and laser rangefinder system held in the palm of his hand could pinpoint and call in air attacks on enemy positions with increased efficiency and accuracy. In Afghanistan, as in the Philippines, unmanned aerial drones are providing key intelligence on enemy movements, and advisors can call in the powerful AC-130 gunships or jet attacks. General Grange says today's military advisor is more effective than ever.
They're more potent because of the ability to call in more firepower and more precise. In Vietnam, that same type of fire support was known as the spooky or stinger, though it could be brought in very close and it was accurate. It didn't have the magnitude of firepower as the current AC-130 has, or the technology to pinpoint targets much better than we were able to do, let's say, in Vietnam or even in Grenada.
While advisors' technology has changed dramatically, the human and political challenges remain the same. All the high-tech tools in the world still can't relieve mental and physical stress, sleeplessness, lack of food, bad weather, or fear. And on the political front, the old criticism that advisors can overstep bounds remains valid as well. In El Salvador in the 1980s, U.S. advisors worked very closely with the Salvadoran army, some said pushing the limits of what it means to be an advisor. Critics said advisors were willfully blind to Salvadoran army human rights abuses. Former Special Ops Advisor Vickers is now Strategic Studies Director at the Center for Strategic and Budgetary Assessment, a Washington think tank. Vickers admits that unless clear boundaries are drawn, advising can quickly turn into combat.
When you're giving training or operational advice in a war, there are lots of reasons why those lines blur in a lot of cases, that to be fully effective, those forces that don't necessarily operate as well without the advisor present, and so you get drawn into conflict in some cases.
Take the case of the Abu Sayyaf rebels in the Philippines. U.S. forces are advising and training the government army to better go after the Muslim separatists, who've become something of a kidnapping goon squad. Right now, U.S. troops are only allowed to train with government troops at the battalion level, meaning about 500 soldiers at a time. U.S. advisors are not allowed out on patrol. But Pentagon officials tell NPR there is now a vigorous discussion about changing that rule and allowing U.S. advisors to work and patrol with government forces at the company level, meaning groups of 20 soldiers or fewer. Abu Sayyaf operate on a rugged, small island, and going out on patrol with small units will certainly increase the risk that advisors could be pulled into defensive combat. Chuck Pena is the senior defense policy analyst at the Cato Institute. He doesn't doubt that advisors and trainers may be more effective and vital these days. But Pena says the military is stretching itself thin by entering places such as the Republic of Georgia and the Philippines, and he says losing sight of the real threat, Al-Qaeda.
I think what we're doing is we're chasing down people and groups who are problems to those governments, the Philippines and Georgia, but who do not represent a terrorist threat to the United States. And people are linking these groups to Al-Qaeda, but the linkages are so tenuous, and there's no clear evidence that they are part of what Al-Qaeda's plan is against the United States.
Perhaps the Philippines and Georgia are merely the more high-profile spots that the administration points to as proof of a global attack on terrorism. The other fronts in this war will be more covert and likely resemble what's happening right now in remote pockets of northern Pakistan. Pakistani forces chasing down Al-Qaeda cells, with U.S. Special Operations advisors leading the way. Eric Westervelt, NPR News, Washington.